Well, the Cabinet today is a relatively small Cabinet agenda, quite a big committee one. We have had some discussion on the Lebanon situation, obviously welcoming the United Nations resolution. As for where the UN goes from here and drawing together a UN force, there's still a lot of questions to be answered. And the UN hasn't set out its specifications, but as I've been saying for some weeks, we would want to make a response that is probably would be best characterised as a niche contribution, given the commitments that we have elsewhere. The aviation security issues which arose from last week's arrests in the United Kingdom have obviously been very challenging for airports around the world. Last night, the Aviation Security Service received an amendment to the earlier notices sent by the US Department of Homeland Security, and that had the effect of reducing some of the requirements but also adding others. So for example, aerosols were included in the list of things which couldn't be included in hand baggage, but on the other hand, there was no longer any need to be checking people's shoes, so that reduced condition is in place as of today at Auckland Airport. The situation seems to have been very well handled at Auckland International Airport, which is clearly the most affected, with the effects on our outward bound passengers not nearly as disruptive as might have been expected initially, thanks to rapid rearrangements that the airport put in place on Friday. They had planned for such a contingency, and it worked well, and Aviation Security says they had very, very good cooperation from the airport. So our attitude has been that whatever international security requirements there are, New Zealand must meet them because of the great importance to us of tourism and air freight. These are lifelines for our economy, and it's absolutely vital that we meet whatever the conditions are. Coming up this week, today or tomorrow, Ruth Dyson will be releasing terms of reference for a review of the disability strategy, which has been in place for some years now. It is coming up for a regular review. I note that the retail trade stats are up tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, there will be a range of announcements made around proposed changes in the criminal justice system. There has been a deepening irony that with the lowest recorded crime rates in 22 years, prison numbers continue to rise very, very steadily. They have plateaued in recent months, but nonetheless the rise has been alarming and is not sustainable with that rate of growth in the longer term. So we have been charging officials and commissioning work from the Law Commission for some time, and we have a range of proposals to announce tomorrow. I understand a number of media were briefed in the January period by Sir Geoffrey on some of the work that the Law Commission has been undertaking for the government. And the remainder of the week we'll see a number of speeches and events around Mark Burton and other ministers involved with these announcements. Coming up later in the week, Michael Cullen will be launching the International Education Strategy. I referred to that last week. And there's also expected to be some further publicity around the mergers of the Southern Island Teachers Colleges with the Southern Universities towards the end of the week. And we expect the external migration stats out on Friday. I have circulated a press statement about the arrangements for Wednesday week with the swearing-in of the new Governor-General. The proceedings at the front of Parliament will start from 11:45 in the morning. There will be a small welcoming group from the Indian community and the traditional welcome from Tangata Whenua before Judge and Mrs. Sachinand proceed to the dais on the steps of Parliament for the swearing-in. After that, the Governor-General takes the royal salute and inspects the honour guard, I speak and the new Governor-General speaks. There is a tri-service Royal Guard of Honour. There will be, following those proceedings and the 21 gun salute, the official party will move into the Grand Hall to the Grand Hall before going to the Beehive Banquet Hall for the reception. In the event of wet weather, the official ceremony slimmed down will take place in the Legislative Council chamber. Any questions?
Prime Minister, despite the controversy and opposition attacks and media attention of the field, it doesn't seem to have affected your party's ratings at all. Do you think the public simply don't care about this issue?
I have a view that there are issues which resonate within the Beltway and issues which resonate beyond the Beltway. Beyond the Beltway, the New Zealand economy, even at the low point of the economic cycle, continues to perform very well. I think the government has given credit for good management. The unemployment figures last week were spectacularly low, and we can now point to 337,000 more people in work under the Labor government than there were before. There's not a bad winter sports season going on. In other words, there are a lot of things which people do give their attention to, and there are some which may be of great interest here because they have a certain amount of theatre about them, but they're not particularly salient.
Well, it hasn't affected your party's poll ratings, according to our polling. Our polls show that a majority of people think that you should resign from Parliament. Does that concern you, that you've got an MP in the ranks that people think shouldn't be there as a result of it?
I've made it clear from the time I released the report that there are a number of matters of concern in it, and that there were significant errors of judgment, and that Mr. Field would need to work to improve the way he operated as a Member of Parliament. As I've repeated here ad nauseam, this man has been severely punished. Not only was he not reappointed as a minister after the election, the report did not give grounds for reinstatement, so he is no longer a minister. There's been a high level of public humiliation, as indicated, I think, in the response to your question, and he has made a public apology.
Prime Minister, why don't you identify how much the Auditor General has identified in this letter to you what may have been overspent?
At this point, the Auditor General has written to Parliamentary Services. He's enclosed an opinion from the Solicitor General. Parliamentary Service has written to political parties. It has asked for submissions. Parties are in the process of compiling those submissions so that Parliamentary Services can go back to the Auditor General. There is a process going on here. Now, some parties may choose to leak bits and pieces from that process, but I don't really propose to go down that track.
Did Dr. Cullen bring proposals or discuss the possibility of retrospective legislation for that?
It's premature to take decisions about how the issue can be resolved because the Auditor General has yet to make a final report. Obviously, we're still in the process of making submissions to Parliamentary Service, which will then make submissions back to the Auditor General. In essence, this is a dispute between the Auditor General and Parliamentary Service as to the rules that Parliamentary Service has put around appropriations.
So did you discuss that?
I just said that.
You said it's premature to take decisions.
Yes, that's what I said. It's premature to take decisions. But of course we are discussing the report and its implications. And the implications are that perhaps as much as $350 million of spending across all parties over quite a number of years is involved. That's why I dismissed the futile gesture last week of a cheque being written for $10,000 and suggested that Dr. Brash might like to consider cashing up his kiwi fruit farm if he was going to go down that track.
Is it more appropriate beginning point, though, the Speaker's directive from November 2003, which is when Dr. Brash decided to follow the rules and has ended up with no obligation?
Well, my advice is that the change in 2003 was extremely minor and has no bearing on this.
Prime Minister, Vector has effectively declared an investment strike today, only a week after the government policy statement and the opposite effect. What do you make of that? Who do you blame for this strike?
Obviously, Vector and the Commerce Commission have a different take on the issues. There seems to be some contested evidence between them as to what the Commerce Commission understood Vector's pathway forward on reconciling and rebalancing its tariffs was, and what Vector itself understood. It's clear that Vector and the Commerce Commission need to engage constructively with each other with a view to reaching an administrative settlement. And the best advice one can give to both parties is to get on and do that.
Do you think the Commerce Commission was acting in the spirit of the announcement you made just last week here to encourage investment in the sector when it moved on Vector?
The Commerce Commission must enforce and uphold the law as it sees it. Vector, like other lines companies, is a monopoly. So the Commerce Commission has a duty to consumers to protect them from excessive behaviour by monopolies. On the other hand, the government policy statement makes it clear that it should regulate in a way which doesn't choke off investment. So the balance has to be found, and the outcome of this dispute between the two of them will be to strike a balance. No doubt both sides will shift some way. But I think it's really important for both to knuckle down and engage rather than engage in standoff behaviour.
Well,
The Commerce Commission is carrying out its job as it sees it. And it is an independent regulator. It is not required to give effect to government policy under the law. It is required to have regard to government policy. I'm sure they did have regard to government policy. However, to have got to this point of issuing a notice of intent to take control has undoubtedly been rather a long process. And that's why I say it's incumbent on both the parties to this dispute, the regulator and the monopoly, to knuckle down and engage with each other and work towards an administrative settlement.
Was the government forewarned about the Commission's decision when you were making the announcement last week?
I had no knowledge whatsoever that the Commerce Commission was on the verge of making such a decision.
So just returning to the Auditor General's report for a minute, has Mark Cullen drafted any legislation like you were sort of discussing last week that might resolve parties retrospectively for what the Auditor General thinks is unlawful or spending outside the appropriation?
Well, in the normal course of events where the Auditor General deems spending to have been outside appropriation, there would be a validating legislation. And of course that is being considered, but it's not appropriate to make decisions until the Auditor General has come down with his report, which may or may not reflect what his draft suggestions have been.
Would it help you politically if the Auditor General himself recommended retrospective legislation?
As I said, the dispute is in essence between Parliamentary Services and the Auditor General. The Auditor General appears to dislike the rules which Parliamentary Service has placed around the spending of the appropriation. No political party sets out to break any rules established by the Parliamentary Service. I want to underline that, because I think there have been some quite gross and defamatory allegations put about parties' intentions. It is never the intention of my party or any other party, in my view, to break rules. You work within the rules as you see them.
Do you recall how the pledge card itself was signed off by Parliamentary Service? Did someone literally take it to Parliamentary Service?
I have no idea, because I'm not involved in that level of administration of that parliamentary budget.
When you say it's signed off by Parliamentary Service, they are in effect though signing off.
Parliamentary Service pays for it. I'm aware of one member who approached Parliamentary Service to see whether it was then possible to have it distributed at parliamentary expense, and was advised that it was. There was no question that Parliamentary Service considered that expenditure be within the appropriation.
But the Parliamentary Service rules that they are following were actually signed off by the PSC, which is and actual fact MPs, and you seem to be trying to separate them.
No, what I'm saying to you is that there has been an inference to be drawn from a lot of reporting that parties set out to break rules. That is quite wrong. Parties set out to act within the rules which have been determined, and parliamentary service is then the judge, because it pays the bills, as to whether there has been a proposal within an appropriation.
Do you think this is getting resonance inside the Beltway?
Inside the Beltway? Well, the undue amount of time you're spending on it suggests that inside the Beltway it may be of some interest.
What about
whether
outside?
It is beyond is quite another matter.
Whose decision was it in the Labor Party, whether in your office or headquarters, to say that the leader's budget will be set aside to pay for the beach guard? Who made the decision?
Well, the card has on each occasion been paid for from that appropriation. So there would not even have been a conscious decision. It would simply have been assumed that the previous practice would occur.
Isn't it inevitable that the rules are going to have to be rewritten, at least to reflect what your understanding of?
Absolutely. And there's no doubt in my mind, having been around here for a rather long time, that the purpose of those parliamentary party budgets was to enable the parliamentary parties to promote their policy. Now, there seems to be a very narrow view in some circles that if you promote your policy, you are electioneering. And that is where clearly political parties have a strong difference. I also think that it was very narrow just to focus on the 3-month period prior to the election, because the Solicitor General's opinion makes it clear that he is focused on not just what happened within 3 months, but throughout the cycle. I certainly see regular examples of spending from this appropriation across political parties, which in my view go right over the edge. I have two newsletters here, for example, from Mr. Huhu and Mr. Blonsky with a phony questionnaire. And at the bottom, those who are told that the information is being collected by Mr. Huhu and Mr. Blonsky, respectively, in their capacity as a Member of Parliament, and will be used for electorate and related political activity. Neither of these members have an electorate, so one assumes the sole purpose is related political activity. So, as I say, it's all very well for Dr. Bresch to front up with $10,000. The implications of the decision are that perhaps $350 million over a period of time affecting all political parties is involved, and that's why Parliament will have a decision to make about how to proceed.
How do you think something like a pin with the party's logo on it is promoting that party's policy?
If it has material on the pen which promotes key policies, of course it is. And Parliamentary Services has long sanctioned that, as I think it's sanctioned Acts Bus, Bill English's billboards, and many other things.
Can the Auditor General actually ask you to pay the money back? Was that the
I have no idea, and I certainly am not aware of any such request.
Would it be a lot easier to have open state funding of political parties?
Of course it would. And that is something that needs to be considered in this context. It should be remembered that one of the reasons the National Party is so sanctimonious about the last 3 months of the election campaign is that it had vast amounts of money from the Exclusive Brethren and very large corporates. And when one sees a policy like the one on accident compensation, which they drove out again and recycled last week, which involves privatisation of accident compensation and many billions of dollars for business for insurance companies, you can see that promises are being made which are of direct benefit to very large corporates. Now, if you want to clean up the New Zealand political system, I advise taking a close interest in rules around the funding of political parties, and I suggest that our system would benefit from more transparent forms of state funding.
So that could mean that Labor would have to do without pushes from unions as well, though, wouldn't it?
I am very happy to have it all dealt with in an open way, so that parties like the National Party can't tip millions of dollars into trust funds and then deny that they know where the money came from.
Do you think it's specific that the Auditor General was just trying to achieve?
Well, if that's the outcome of it, that would be very much welcome. But what I'm taking exception to, and talking to a number of other political leaders, they're taking great exception to, is any inference that our parties set out to break rules. Absolutely not. People set out to work within the rules.
Sorry, do you have specific advice about that $350 million figure? Like, what period does that cover?
Oh, going back... about 16, 17 years.
Any other issues? Yeah. Because Ian's got to go to a plane.
Is it fair to say, even though you're not breaking the rules, though, the parties have been trying to push the boundaries on them?
No, I don't believe that's true either. Technology changes. People have different ideas of the way you promote things. You know, we don't operate with a Gestetner anymore. It's just... times move on. When these budgets were first established, there wasn't an internet to communicate through. So parliamentary services has always allowed parties to develop new ways of communicating. And as I say, the whole purpose of that budget was to enable parties to communicate with policies.
Following speculation at the weekend, I'm wondering if you would, about the UN job, would you allow your name to go forward for Secretary-General if there was no consensus in the first round?
I read the piece of fiction in the Herald at the weekend. I'm sure so did the visiting Korean foreign minister who was lobbying for the position. I can say to you that I had had no approach about that position. I have made no approach about that position. It is not on my mind. I have consistently said that the best job for me in the world right now is the one I have, being Prime Minister of New Zealand.
What's your position on the Korean candidacy?
Well, we haven't taken a position on any candidacy.
Did you speak to Mr Blair about it when you were in London?
Oh, of course not. The so-called secret meeting, which was set up and arranged by the New Zealand High Commission for my husband and me to meet with Tony and Cherie Blair.
Promise, do you have a view on whether the likes of Icebreaker should be able to leverage potentially off the Buy New Zealand Made campaign in Greece?
Without wanting to make it overly complex, if you're talking about what is New Zealand Made in a very strict sense, there will be rules of origin issues around that. If you're talking about wanting to promote iconic Kiwi companies, you have to find a way for companies like Icebreaker to be promoted within the concept of Buy New Zealand Made, because the raw material comes out of here, the ideas come out of here, the design, the branding, the marketing, the entrepreneurship. We could make similar points about Fisher & Paykel, which increasingly is manufacturing offshore. But who is to say that that iconic Kiwi company shouldn't have the benefit of having a push of Buy New Zealand about it? So it's a more complicated issue than it appears on the surface.
And is Labor trying to encourage the Greens perhaps to be a bit more flexible on that issue?
I think they acknowledge the point. They acknowledge the point that there are issues around rules of origin, but also that there are companies which employ a great many Kiwis at certain points in the value chain, but there may be a point in the value chain, which is the assembly of the product, which isn't made here. So there's still discussion to be had around that.
Thank you.